Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, I wanted to talk to you about RotoBaller.com. Win big in 2022 with RotoBaller.com's MLB and DFS Premium Pass, which includes 15 exclusive lineup tools, daily DFS cheat sheets, and our new Team Sync platform. Use RotoBaller's exclusive hitter projections, pitching planners, DFS value displays, research stations, lineup optimizer, and more to help you win big. For a limited time, get your MLB Premium Pass for an extra 10% off with your discount code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A. Just visit rotoballer.com, use promo code Bubba, B-U-B-B-A for 10% off the Premium Pass for the MLB season, and get started to rotoballing like a boss. And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 9. Going to talk about some April to May gainers and faders in the K to walk percentage department, one of the best pitching stats to check out. Go over some recent news, aka IL stints galore, and much, much more. You can find myself on Twitter at BDentric, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friends?
I'm great, Bubba. I am refreshed. I'm back from vacation. Last week was a little bit of a an operation doing from the laptop microphone from my parents' bedroom, which but it worked out. We had a decent show, but it just feels so much more at home in my little studio setup / basement with the Dodgers and Mets on TV. It feels good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's a Thursday night. Gonna finished my HQ article, so I'm pretty pumped on that. And I got the baseball game on as well. That's kind of the fun about both of us doing this at night. We both got MLB Network on basically every time, and we'll have a game on, talk some baseball, have a little fun. So life is good over here, Mr. Bloomfield. Life is good.
It's funny, like on Thursdays during the day, usually when we start prepping for these, I do check the MLB schedule, and I'm like, is there, because Thursday it could be, you know, a lot of day games, yeah. Getaway day, whatever. And sometimes just not a lot of games in general. But I always check and I'm like, is there a game on while we record? Because I really freaking hope so. Because it's a good feeling.
It makes a big difference. Because I tell people that don't understand that during the off season when I'm doing late shows, it's just not the same feel when I don't have like something on. Like the game on is just such a different animal type thing. But I digress.
And we are able to, we still listen to each other, even though we are watching games while doing the podcast. Don't want to...
Yes, multitasking is not difficult.
We can do that.
Regard, so
we can do that.
Yes,
we
learned very, very good. I can walk and chew gum at the same time. You'd be surprised, people. It's very, very good. But and Ryan can play golf and push a stroller, so we're all good there. let's hit up some of these IL stints, as there's way too many of them. So we'll try to run through them here. But Hyunjin Ryu goes to the IL, and it doesn't look like it's a good one because it's a left forearm deal, which is never a good sign. He's going to undergo an MRI, get some more info back from that, but he's going to probably be out for a little bit, Mr. Bloomfield. So what's your take on the Toronto Blue Jays situation?
Yeah, it's not great. I think Ryu had forearm issues in that same region earlier this year. And then, usually like a repeat forearm inflammation can be a precursor to something UCL related, which sucks for Ryu. Does open up a rotation spot for, I believe, Ross Stripling, who like kind of has been pretty good this year, and someone who I'm pretty interested in. I think it's a two-step next week, and the first of that two-step is at Kansas City. I don't know how stretched out Stripling will be for at least that first game, but some really good numbers from Stripling. Like in deeper leagues, I'd definitely be interested, especially because the Blue Jays lineup has been really bad, but starting to heat up. Throwing his changeup a lot more. That changeup usage is up 10% from last year, and he's fading his four-seam fastball. So the swing strike rate is up. The ground ball rate is at 54%, which is a result of that changeup. So a lot of good going on beneath the hood, despite a 4.22 ERA for Stripling. Someone who I think I'm going to be pretty interested in this weekend in Fab, if he's available. I have not started looking, but someone near the top of my list.
Yeah, he's got at Kansas City, at Detroit at this point in time. Detroit's so even if he's not stretched out, that could be like, yeah, that could be like a seven innings of solidness, even if he's not stretched out. So that could be a nice little run there for Stripling. And I'm hoping he gets a good push here because he was one of my favorite like later round DC targets, just as a fill-in kind of guy. And so this could be a nice little shot in the arm that a lot of my teams need right now. All right, Sonny Gray, he goes to the IL. This is a tough one. I hope people dodged it because he was day-to-day on Monday when you locked in your lineups. They're optimistic he was going to play this week. That didn't happen. Pectoral strain. They say it's just to kind of make sure he's healthy. No big deal. We'll see. Any thoughts on the twin situation?
Yeah, I'm worried just because it's all related to the arm, upper body, and Gray's had injury issues before. And yeah, like the Twins rotation's getting pretty thin, and actually everything about the Twins is getting pretty thin. We've got Joe Ryan on the COVID IL currently, but Paddock's out for the season. Sonny Gray, Dobnak's on the 60-day IL. They don't really have a rotation right now. Like they've got Dylan Bundy, Smeltzer, who has pitched really well, but the peripherals do not really support that. Bailey Ober's good. Chris Archer's going like four or five innings if he's lucky. And then I think old Chichi Gonzalez is going to be starting on Friday for them. Man. Not very interested.
Get your DFS stacks going, folks.
Yep.
All right. Cincinnati Reds, Tyler Naquin was starting to heat up, Ryan. Was starting to heat up, and now he goes to the IL, and he could be out for up to a month, they're saying. Quad strain, he had a PRP injection, which is never good, because that's like a minimum of probably at least a month before we see him again. So Naquin's out for some time. They recalled TJ Friedel and some others to probably mix and match through there. But with Naquin going down, how are you assessing Cincinnati?
It's not great. You've got, I think, the Punisher is back after being sent to exile in AAA earlier this year. As Aristides Aquino is getting some play now in right field. And then Albert Almora, who I think I've been touting as a late, late sleeper as of like 5 years ago, is in right field hitting every day. Similar to the Twins, getting thin. I'm not interested in really either one. The interesting thing in that outfield, though, is Nick Senzel, who is healthy and hitting leadoff every day. So that's interesting to me, and that just opens up a little bit more just because of the Naquin injury. But kind of sucks for Naquin. Like you said, he's been pretty good. Like I've had him in mixed labor and kind of a nice sampling of homers and steals, not the greatest batting average, but nobody has a good batting average, at least early on this season. So tough timing for Naquin. He was kind of an under the radar productive outfielder in deeper leagues. So
asking for a friend, if you have a league that doesn't have IL spots, would you drop Tyler Naquin?
You are probably, as my friend, dropping him depending on how many other guys are hurt. Like we are running through so many IL stints right now. Like on your you know, prototypical stash list, Naquin isn't that high. I'm especially if it's going to be like a month. I'm probably ditching. I don't know who your other options are, but or your friends' other options are, but
my friends' other options. Yeah, no, I drafted a lot of late Tyler Naquin this year, so this one stings. So I'll have some definite decisions to make this week, including the next guy, who we were both fans of, Gene Segura.
Oh.
This is why you're not supposed to bunt, kids. You're not supposed to bunt. Fractures fingers out 10 to 12 weeks. So September maybe late August. He's a drop for me unless you have an IL spot. It sucks in a big way.
I was just going to say the same thing. Like, I don't think there's really much of a choice if you don't have IL for Segura. He was the glue that was holding a lot of my teams together. And I hope without that glue, things don't fall apart. On a bunt, like, oh man, I saw it and I was like, I hope it's just like a 2 to 3 week thing. Then it came out 10 to 12. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but, that seems really long. So that's really rough. You've got to drop Segura. I mean, 2 to 3 months, we're already in June. And so, yeah, like you just did the math and, you really can't hold him unless you have perfect health elsewhere. And then the bad part is like there's not really anyone. I mean, Nick Maton is filling in. He started at second base and hit eighth on Wednesday. Stott has been absolutely horrific for the Phillies. And so it's brutal because there's no – it's brutal for the Phillies as well, because there's just nothing coming back and backfilling Segura. I wonder if they're going to look and try and make a move to keep things afloat. We'll see.
That's my guess. My guess is they're going to have to do something because the options, like you said, are so bad right now. So there's got to be some team out there. It's got to – like the A's or someone. Like even Jed Lowry is an improvement on what their options are right now. So it's that bad in Philadelphia. So we'll have to wait and see. Kyle Lewis goes on the 7-day concussion IL. Not much you can do there. He should be back soon, but he was actually like, he came out the doors swinging. So that's a big one. Joey Wendell and Brian Anderson both go on the IL for the Marlins. Does that do anything for you?
It hurts for Brian Anderson. I was digging him. Wendell's been fine, but yeah, it hurts for Miami, hurts for Sandy Alcantara's run support, I'll tell you that. Although he did win today with another
he got the job done today.
Stud victory. But yeah, like their Marlins are running out Luke Williams at third base right now. Garrett Cooper probably gets every day, assuming he's healthy, gets every day run at DH, which is interesting to me. And he's been hitting like second or fourth most days, but not really too much else of an upshot. The only other one that's pretty interesting for me on the Marlins is John Birdie. I've been a John Birdie stand for a long time. I know he's been pretty polarizing just because he kind of can't hit, but he is a utility guy that can pretty much play. And this was, I mean, we talked about this in the preseason, is like you wanted with like VR, who is on the IL as well, but anyone with like multiple paths to playing time, you know, they're gonna get time. And this is what we're seeing with John Birdie: 6 steals, 2 homers, 262 batting average. I don't think the home run rate will be anything much more than that, but if you need bags and John Birdie's available, I think he's going to play just because he's so versatile and there's so many injuries to Marlins infield right now.
Yeah, Mr. Birdie, he runs wild. So like you said, now he's got playing time. We've seen him just rack up stolen bases, so that's definitely something that might come into play. Be quite interesting in the coming weeks here. Alcides Escobar to the IL again, not the biggest move, but it brings Luis Garcia up, who was torching AAA, and everyone was clamoring for him to get a spot up here. He went 1-for-4 in his debut. He went 0-for-3 tonight as we record. So any thoughts on maybe Luis Garcia going forward?
Super geeky database nerds like me do not rejoice just because we need MLBAM IDs. There are too many now. I guess hitters, pitchers, different teams, you can kind of make it work. But yeah, Luke Garcia is really interesting. I mean, I don't know what Alcides Escobar was doing on the Nationals anyway. It's kind of like Darwinism that this is happening, that he's kind of stepping aside and Garcia's stepping in. Fat Price is going to be so dependent on what Garcia does this weekend. Went 1-for-4 in his debut. I'm not sure what he did today on Thursday.
0-for-3 today.
0-for-3 today. So 1-for-7. You kind of almost, if you believe if you believe in him, you're kind of hoping for a slow weekend so that the Fat Price stays down. Because I think he's going to get he should get everyday run on a Nats team that, you know, is kind of decent at the top of the order, but is very shallow, not deep at all. So I think Arcia should get plenty of run, and let's see what he does. And with any of these guys, like, it's just so hard to make the adjustment. We've seen that even with the best prospects this season and last year. So, like, I'm not expecting him to, go bonkers out of the gate, but anyone with prospect pedigree like this who's going to be able to play every day, and we've talked a lot about guys who play every day on bad teams, like, for fantasy, that's not bad. So he'll be an interesting fab guy this weekend.
Yeah, people were looking forward to him getting called up, so someone's going to pay a lot for him. So it won't be me, but someone will, and I'm curious to see how that all plays out. Speaking of prospect pedigree, Wander Franco hits the IL with left forearm tightness, fluid in his forearm, basically what it can, injured, strained forearm, different ways that Mr. Mark Tompkin has tweeted it out the last week. But he talked to Franco earlier today, and he said the goal is 2 weeks, but conceded the specific timetable was fairly fluid, which is not very positive in my mind that he's not stuck on 2 weeks. So Franco might be out for a little while here. What's your thoughts on this one?
I mean, you got to hold him, right? I mean, if going from the Franco angle, but yeah, the uncertainty is rough. Franco, like, he's kind of doing what we thought he would do, hitting for a decent batting average, 270, four homers, four steals, like that's great. 28% fly ball rate is pretty rough. I'd like to see that go up a little bit for the power, but kind of similar, like, upshot. It's just one more opening for our man, for Mr. Birdie. And I think that's who you want to target. The other thing too, like, I didn't even know this, but, like, Williams Astudillo is on the Marlins and played second base a few days ago. So God, that's a name from the past.
Yeah. When I saw El Tortuga was hitting in Coors Field in a Marlins jersey the other day, I was like, man, I should have called in sick to work. That was a must-see television moment. But, yeah, he's back. He's back, and it's beautiful. He's back and beautiful, which is always great. Seiya Suzuki started out the year on fire. Not much going on in his direction anymore. Sprained ring finger on his left hand will have him out for a little bit. Maybe it's a break he needs because things got cooled down pretty quickly for Mr. Suzuki. And other than that, I guess it just kind of locks in playing time for the Ortegas and the Morels and everybody of the world in that Cubs outfield for now.
Yep, it does. And the Cubs were like, they had that famous 9-game week this week. And so I was all over Cubs and Fab this week, and a bunch of folks, as they should be, are as well. Morel has really been the one who benefits from this, not just because, he's playing every day anyway in center field, but now he's hitting leadoff, running wild. Like that's a good thing. Jason Hayward might get some more time. They're starting to get to the point of like PJ Higgins playing, and it's just like, whoa. But yeah, the other interesting name, Clint Frazier, who might get a little bit of run now with Suzuki sideline. We'll see. It's been a long road to hoe for Frazier, but there's got to be some talent there that's lingering, but wouldn't hold my breath on it.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Brad Miller goes to the IL, but there's been no designation, so it could be COVID, could be a lot of things. So he might be back soon again. He's just more of a platoon versus a heavy righty week. But any thoughts on Brad Miller?
Not really. Platoon. I actually had him a bunch in TGFBI, and he hits. He has some pop, but you're playing matchups. You're streaming him anyway, and now you're not.
Zach Greinke, who I hope you weren't rostering to begin with, he goes to the IL, 15-day IL. Maybe it's a blessing. It gives you guys a reason to drop him, is the way I would look at it.
It's like it's derailing the path of how few strikeouts can you rack up over an entire season. Unfortunately, we won't get the answer to that question. One interesting thing, and I know he has not been called up yet, and this guy was the bane of many people's existence last season, but Jackson Kowar is actually dominating AAA right now, and I wonder when that call is going to come. I would imagine pretty soon, because Kansas City showed that they would like to do that. I mean, they did it last year. They called him up, I think, a couple of times. And I mean, he got bombed both times, yep. But that happens with prospects. And so I do wonder if, you know, just one less obstacle in the way for Coar, as somebody who I know, like in NFBC leagues, you know, if he's available and you have room to stash, that's somebody who might be worth it just because the market's so down on Coar because of what he did last year, but the pedigree's there and the AAA numbers this season, 40 innings. He's got a ERA near 5, but the strikeout and walk rates have been really good. So someone who I think you can sneak in for pretty cheap before you get the call up. If you're really desperate for pitching, and who isn't at this point.
And we saw the improvements that Springer or Brady Singer made. Yes. So maybe Coar could be in the same vein that, you know, Singer was getting hit around a lot last year too. And now he's come back and he looks like a brand new man with that pitch mix change. So maybe Coar is doing something similar. We'll see, but definitely worth a shot to go that direction. This one stinks, and I don't know what I was doing, but I missed this one until I wrote up this outline. But Brandon Woodruff hits the IL with a high ankle sprain, which is always the worst type of ankle sprain.
Yes.
The severity is still yet to be known, but I don't like the idea of a high ankle sprain from a big boy on the mound. That is just not a good feeling to me. So what's your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Woodruff a bunch in our a couple of weeks ago and our over under for ERA. Hopefully he's out not long enough so that he can still qualify for our little match there. But just brutal, and brutal for the Brewers too, because it's Freddy Peralta too. Like that rotation, yep, is two of the big three are down, and you've got Aaron Ashby now, who has been fantastic, struck out 12 in his last outing. Eric Lauer has been great. You got Adrian Hauser, who has not. This week, the new face has been Jason Alexander, who, like, everyone makes the Seinfeld reference. And I just think of the Office-based guy named Michael Bolton. Like, that guy just has to hate, man, Seinfeld. Like, his name never comes up without that also coming up. But yeah, Jason Alexander is your fill-in, it looks like, along with Hauser on the back end of that rotation.
Yeah, and keep an eye on Ethan Small too. He could be someone that might get some run. They called him up for a spot, yep, start, and he might get another some more run as well. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. You mentioned Johnny VR earlier. This one stunk because he's on the IL with a mouth injury that he suffered while working out. Not making that up. That was the exact quote. So dental work for Jonathan VR.
Yeah, it sounds bad. Like it sounds mm-hmm, very intense. I think he was playing with those resistant bands, not playing with them, working out with resistance bands, and it just like snapped back in his face. So that's why I don't do that stuff. I stay away from most exercise, but specifically that. But yeah, VR, it's rough because we had talked about again a couple weeks ago how, you know, this was kind of the time. The playing time had opened up for VR, and we wanted to see what he could do. I mean, he's got the stolen base difference maker, and obviously that's not going to happen now. So, we ran through the Cubs infield a little bit earlier. Like, Nico Hoerner is someone who has been playing every day and actually running and hitting for some power as well, and that comes with the normal batting average. So that's someone who is probably snapped up in deeper leagues, but Nico Hoerner, someone who now is, now that he's back and healthy, is someone who's, you know, just, he's probably starting anyway over Simmons, and now with VR out, like, that's just, he's pretty much implanted and hitting .285, 3 homers, 5 steals. Like, that'll definitely play in pretty much any league.
Yeah, he's having a nice start to this 9-game week too. So I'm looking, yep, I'm enjoying what Nico's doing. It's just the opportunity he's looking for right there. Robbie Grossman goes to the IL with a neck strain. I almost feel like this is a, hey, take a breather, kid, and figure it out. We need your 2020 skills back, because it's been a rough go for Robbie Grossman to start the year here. And I actually started putting him on the chopping block last week in certain leagues, which really stung. But he goes to the IL with the neck strain.
I was going to even bench him in AL Tout, which is kind tough. Of the lowest, yeah, of the low, being a 12-team, mm-hmm, AL only. But, like, yeah, Grossman, I mean, hitting .199. The OBP is kind of still there. Like, .311 isn't terrible. But, like you said, 2020 last year, Bubba, and 0 home runs, 2 stolen bases. I agree. Like, maybe this is just, no, regroup and come back and let's see what you can do. So I don't know. Cody Clements is now in left field. We all know his lineage. Daz Cameron's getting some run in right. Neither one, especially Clements, isn't really that interesting to me. I do wonder if like Eric Haas will start to get a little bit more run, and then just because he can play outfield and he's catcher eligible. And then the last one's Willie Castro, who has been leading off every single day, playing center, right, and left. That's probably the guy who probably benefits the most from a fantasy standpoint, just because he was on the fringe of fantasy relevance, already eligible, I believe, at second and short, and now he's playing outfield, hitting .283 with a great strikeout rate, homer and two bags. So Willie Castro is somebody who kind of is like this year's Grossman, leading off every day and piling up plate appearances right now on a bad team, and that's gonna matter over the long haul.
One name I'll mention, if you're talking stash, Riley Green could be back soon.
That's a guy too.
To keep in mind in Detroit. He was drafted in the preseason because people were that hyped on him. So keep an eye on him. If he legit could be available in formats right now. So keep that in mind. Royce Lewis, this was a bummer. I was getting ready to leave Napa hungover on Monday morning, and Royce Lewis got the call up, and I was beyond excited about this because I kept him, didn't drop him. I'm like, yes, he's back. And then he gets the wall and bruises his knee, and he's back on the IL, Ryan. So here we are again, my old friend Royce Lewis on the IL.
At the worst time too, with Correa on the, at least on the COVID list, and so now it's Jermaine Palacios playing shortstop for the Twins, and that is not someone who the Twins want playing short or you want playing short on your team. Apologies for that bad news, Bubba. The hangover probably went away for like an hour, and then it came back with the Royce news.
So. Yep, it was short-lived, that's for sure. The last bit of news, another guy I have rostered in many places this year, is Tim Anderson, who goes to the IL, and Tony La Russa doesn't think this will be a short stint on the IL. So this really stinks as well. What's your thoughts on Tim Anderson?
Yeah, and it's a groin. Like, this is really concerning because not only, like, was Tim Anderson raking, I also have, we were both huge Anderson guys in the preseason. We kind of saw what happened with this last year, where Anderson didn't really run in the second half, had that, I think they called it hamstring or just like tired legs or whatever it was, something with the lower body wasn't quite right with Anderson, and he basically stopped running. He can still be, you know, plenty effective. The batting average is there, the plate appearances are there, good lineup and some power, that sort of thing. But I do wonder, with a groin, and I guess maybe out like 3 weeks, keep an eye on how much he's running. And if you have Tim Anderson on your team, like, don't think you're in as good of shape as you might look to be in steals, and start looking for replacements that have some speed, because I don't know how much that speed is going to come back, if it's anything like we saw last year in the second half for Anderson. So I hate to be kind of a doubter on that, but that's definitely something that I certainly remember, because I have Tim Anderson on my, you know, teams every year because I love the guy. But that second half production kind of went down last year. I hope it's not the same this season, but we'll see.
Yep, if you have Tim Anderson, John Birdie's should be one of your favorite targets this week.
There you go. Think about. Tie it back to, yeah, exactly. And Lurie Garcia should not,
the White Sox. Never. No. You're only Tony La Russa believes he should be. That's about it. Yeah. All right, Bloom Board time, and I love this one. This is almost like great minds think alike, but he's actually the smart one here. So why don't you elaborate on the Bloom Board for the evening, Ryan?
All right, this one I like because it's pretty simple. So it and we've mentioned this before, but if you're looking at one pitching metric that is, you know, there's no perfect silver bullet out there or whatever, but with just so much stuff out there, strikeout minus walk rate is the go-to for just if you want to look at one number to see how well a pitcher's doing. By ignoring the results, it's strikeout minus walk rate. So what I did with this one is I compared strikeout minus walk rate for all starting pitchers from April to May. And so we've got 15 guys whose strikeout to walk rate rose the most and 15 whose did not. And so there's like, I don't know, with these types of boards, with, I mean, we're talking about short samples. These are like four, maybe five starts in a month. Context to this could be a number of things, could just be variance, like guys get hot, guys go on heaters, guys just have a rough time or tipping pitches, you know, can't feel a pitch, and but it'll come back. Schedule is something that's also like something at play. But the biggest thing that I think, and when I put this out on Twitter and just seeing some of the replies and whatnot, is like the perception of how well a player is doing can get so thrown off by what they did in April. We look at, I think Kyle Wright is like the prime example, where like everyone just assumes he's been fantastic, and he has, but all of that pretty much was in April. Kyle Wright had a 1.13 ERA over four starts in April, a 3.94 ERA in March, in May, we just get so ingrained in what we saw in April that kind of tends to linger, and we lose sight of what guys have been doing lately. I fall into that trap all the time. So that was kind of the impetus behind this one, is just to see who's been rising, falling the last 30 days, and some interesting names that came up. And I know a bunch of people on Twitter, which is fantastic, wanted us to cover certain guys. And so that's what we'll do here for a little bit, to try and paint that additional context for you guys.
Yep, we'll try to hit on as many as we can, like usual, and we'll start with one of the big names that everybody was, or a lot of guys were big on this year. That's Nick Pivetta, and literally is a tale of 2 months. April, a 3.8 K to walk. In May, a 19.9 K to walk. If you just look at his game logs, it's literally the tale of 2 months, like six innings or more in five straight starts. He's pitching great in May. In April, there was a massive struggle bus for Nick Pivetta. So, we'll start with Nick Pivetta here. I'm liking what I'm seeing, and I'm still waiting, because we've seen the good and the bad with Nick Pivetta most of his career. So I'm not like in love with Nick Pivetta, but I love what I'm seeing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, same. And like we had Pivetta on our over-under ERA, and I was pretty aggressive at the time. I think I said like under 350 ERA the rest of the season. And Pivetta did have a 2.11 ERA in six May starts. The big thing that I've seen with Pivetta is the control. The walk rate went way down in May. He only had six walks in 38 innings compared to 13 walks in 16 innings. So Nick Pivetta is probably scooped up in your definitely in your deep leagues and your shallow leagues probably as well. But again, just a name where like we've all been burned by Nick Pivetta in the past, like in previous seasons. If you drafted Nick Pivetta this season, you got burned by him in April again. You may have very well dropped him, but he looks like a different pitcher right now. He's just a lot more attacking the zone with a lot more frequency. Velocity is down a little bit. Swing strike rate is down a little bit in May. But again, the big thing for me is control. And the Red Sox are just hitting the crap out of the ball right now. So Pivetta's getting plenty of run support. All he needs to do is five and dive. And these days he's getting wins. So someone who's sneakily been really good in May.
Yeah, very, very good. And I drafted him and I dropped him and then I repicked him up. I didn't get all the bad April, but I got a couple. That's for darn sure.
So you got the bad April, but then you dropped him and you did not get the good May. And I hate when that happens.
No, I got at least two good May starts. So I didn't lose it all. I didn't lose it all. But let's talk Aaron Ashby. You mentioned him earlier with the Woodruff news. And 7.9 K to walk in April, 23.7 in May. And if you look at his game logs, a lot of it's he's going deeper in games now. He's still walking guys, but not to the same extent. And he's throwing more innings, which is allowing for more strikeouts. The dude's legit, and he was available in a couple 12 teams for me last week. Didn't get him, but he was available. So people need to go take another peek. You might be able to get a potential stud on the waiver wire.
Yes, not only 12 strikeouts last outing at Chicago, but 21 swinging strikes in 100 pitches. Like, that is some elite stuff. And I do like this kind of pains me, because Aaron Ashby, and this is where we all make mistakes with our drops. I dropped Aaron Ashby after a pretty like rough skill wise April. Like he was not good in April, and he did not have a role, and I was running out of room on my roster. Those are my excuses anyway. And so he's a drop, and I'm regretting that, because now, yeah, like we talked about with Woodruff, and Peralta's going to be out for a long time. Like, Aaron Ashby is cemented in a rotation and an organization that really knows what they're doing. So this is like a set and forget if you have Ashby right now. And like you said, Bubba, if he's available in leagues, I would be very aggressive just because the skills are there and the role is going to be there. He's going to be in that rotation for a long time. So as much as it pains me to say, I'm going to be missing out on the good Aaron Ashby.
Zach Wheeler appears to be healthy. That's the best thing I can say right now, because there was the concerns in the preseason, dropped his draft day price a bit, scared me off of him just because I don't like to draft injured guys. I feel foolish now because he's looking electric, 11.9 K to walk to 27.6, basically 7 or more Ks in like each of his May starts. He's been electric. It looks great, and he's just fanning guys. And he might be on his way to another attempt at a Cy Young this year.
Yeah, and a lot of, like with Wheeler, a lot of what this was, I mean, you alluded to the injury, was just the ramp up, because the injury wasn't like really, he wasn't actively hurt by opening day. It was just everything was pushed back. And I was scared off too, because shoulder, I mean, that's the word to avoid for starting pitchers. And that was it with Wheeler. And with April, like, yeah, he gave up, Wheeler gave up 7 runs in his second start of the season, 4 runs in his third start of the season. Part of that ramp up, velocity was down. He was just, I mean, that was basically spring training for him. Since those 2 starts, he's given up 6 runs in 6 starts. So, yeah, he looks great, and not really much of like a takeaway really, because Wheeler is an ace. Probably drafted him as an ace, and you're probably not able to trade for him cheap right now because he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball in May. So kudos if you stuck it out despite the injury risk that we all say to avoid.
Here's a fun one. Tony Gonsolin, who initially didn't even have a spot in the rotation to start the season. Obviously things happen, and he's got one now. And he's been great. His last 3 starts, at least 6 innings. Tonight, as we speak, 6 shutout innings against the Mets. The strikeouts have been there. The splitter's been outstanding in this late run he's been doing. So Gonsolin's a guy that might be available out there right now. And I think what we're seeing is pretty legit. Some smarter people than I have written some very good articles breaking down the improvements on Tony Gonsolin. And it looks pretty solid to me, Ryan.
So Tony Gonsolin has a career, and I don't think many people know this, but a career, and it's 187 innings in the majors, career 2.59 ERA and a 1.05 WHIP. Like, that is, I did not realize he had been that good. And the issue with Gonsolin has always been, you know, does he have a spot? And the answer to that typically has been no, but he's been pitching consistently in the rotation. First couple starts were 3 innings, 4 innings. First start of the year was at Coors. Like 21-3 strikeout to walk in his last 3 starts, and stealing tonight. Like, yeah, go out and get Gonsolin if he's still available. If you've got him, enjoy this ride, because it does look like it's going to last for quite a while. Given pretty much everyone on the Dodgers, as I hate to break it to you, but I'm sure you know, is just pitching their brains out right now. Like Kyler Anderson is doing his thing too. So something in the water at Chavez Ravine, but that's okay. Gonsolin looks great.
As long as it's not in the water in October, we're just fine. Robbie Ray, 11.2 K to walk in April, 26.2 in May. And you look at his game logs, he is definitely striking more guys out in May, but he's still walking a handful of guys, and he's still giving up a good amount of runs. So he's not like dominant Robbie Ray like last year, but you're seeing the strikeouts at least in May. So it's kind of like a tale of two sides. Like, do you believe the improvements in K to walk are going to lead to better starts down the line? Or is there still some concern here, Ryan? Because I remember real quick, last year he survived in the heart of the zone a ton, and people said that could backfire eventually. It might be backfiring a little more this year. So what's your thoughts on him?
Well, the thing with Ray last year, like even in his Cy Young season in May last year, 5 starts, he had a 4.60 ERA. Like, the skills were there. The skills were definitely there last year, and they haven't been as much this season. But that's the thing, like, and something that we lose track of. It is a long season. I talk about the Freddie Freeman example a bunch of times before, but Robbie Ray on the pitching side is a great example of that. The thing that the thing that I like and what I saw with Ray is, despite the lower velocity, the swing strike rate in May was just elite, 20.6% swing strike rate, and the walks were fantastic. The problem has been inconsistency. Like he made a June 1st start at Baltimore, walked three guys with only six strikeouts, had 14 whiffs on 89 pitches. So the swing and miss is still there. I think overall, this isn't going to be a complete disaster, which is probably, if you asked for that, like the last week of April, you may have been looking and saying this might be a complete disaster. I think Ray is going to be okay. Maybe a number three starter for you with a bunch of strikeouts, ratios and wins, maybe not there. But I don't think he's going to completely go in the tank like some other Trevor Rogers that have been doing that.
Yeah, I'm going to bring up some of these guys real quick. So Charlie Morton, we'll get to Rogers next. Charlie Morton, 4.7 K to walk in April, 14.7, so a 10-point improvement, but still 14.7 is not great, to say the least. But it's an improvement. It's improvement. He's still struggling out there, though, Ryan. Is this a look for optimism with Morton, or are we still concerned because a lot of guys have given up on Charlie Morton?
Yeah, still pretty concerned. I actually watched most of Morton's last start, and he kind of got screwed. I think he got pulled. They pulled him back out for the sixth inning. He had given up two earned runs at the time. Gave up two hits, got pulled, and both of those guys scored. So the final box score was four earned in five innings, and a lot of that wasn't his doing. However, yeah, he went from like terrible to just okay in May, going from 4.7 to 14.7. So it's nice to see the improvement, but I don't think we're out of the woods at all with Charlie Morton. Still very much concerned about the ineffectiveness of the curveball compared to what we saw last year. And that is one of the things, like, I mean, honestly, the top gainer on this list, we skipped him for a reason, but Vladimir Gutierrez was a gainer because in April, he had a negative 4.8 strikeout minus walk rate.
That's pathetic.
You know, you can improve and still be pretty bad. So I mean, the fascinating thing with that is he got enough innings in May to qualify. You know, but that's Cincinnati for you these days.
Yeah, that's Cincinnati. We'll do Trevor Rogers later because I have a listener question on him, and I know you wrote an article on him, so I'll let you answer that a little deeper later. The last guy I'm going to ask about here before we get to the faders on the list, you hinted at him earlier, Tyler Anderson of those Doyers, has been pitching phenomenally. And one thing he does so well is he just doesn't walk guys, period. Like literally one walk in his last four starts. He's got at least six innings in each start with five or more Ks in each start. He's been super effective for the Dodgers, which really stings. But thoughts on Tyler Anderson?
26 strikeouts to one walk in his last four starts. I mean, it's unbelievable. He's going deep into games. He had a pitch count of 100 and on May 23rd against the Nationals. Like, this is not the same guy that we've seen throughout his career, especially like with Pittsburgh. I had some Tyler Anderson and it was okay at times. The control has always been there. But the strikeouts had never been there like this. And the bump in strikeout rate for Anderson, he's got a career 21%. And in 2020, it was 16%, 2021, 19%, this year, 24%. And supported by swinging strike rate. So that's the one thing I always look at, too. If someone's got a bump in strikeout rate, is that supported by whiffs? And, I mean, Tyler Anderson's got it. And again, you take the Dodger factor, new organization. They know what to do with those raw materials. Their Giants do too, even though they had a rough May on the rotation side of things. But yeah, I mean, I think you have to believe this. Tyler Anderson actually isn't really that old, age 32. We have seen that. Actually, we just talked about Charlie Morton. Like, this is almost like the Charlie Morton type career path, where someone who is just really, you know, Tyler Anderson doesn't throw as hard as Charlie Morton, but was pretty bad for the first few years of his career and didn't really get good until his mid-30s. So yeah, Tyler Anderson, you're riding this as far as you can. I think it'll last pretty long. He looks fantastic.
All right, let's talk faders here. We'll start with one of my Giants, Carlos Rodon. And trust me, it's painful to watch some of these recent starts because it's like a tightrope right now. April, he was just dominant. Just throw him out there. He's going to mow everybody down. In May, he's on the struggle bus. He's walking guys, giving up runs. Strikeouts aren't as often for him. I don't know if it's the arm's already getting tired or what's going on, but he just doesn't look nearly as dominant, Ryan. And I am slightly concerned because this is why I avoided him in draft season. I was waiting for the breakdown, and I'm hoping that's not what this is, but it feels that way when I watch him pitch.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, yeah, you would definitely know more. That's a great take. That's something I'm definitely interested in because you've seen him pitch a lot more than I have. I mean, the one thing I would say is like at least the velocity was stable in May. Like it was 96.3 in April, 96.4 in May. And then he did have a good start. His last start at Philly, which is a really tough start, went 5-1 earned, but had 14 whiffs and 98 pitches. Like, that's good. I think for me, like I'm not super worried. April is the best month of his career, of his season this year for sure. It's just one of those where like perception is a lot rosier than he's actually pitched. At least for me, because I was definitely regretting not getting Rodon after April. And yeah, it's just interesting to see him kind of fall back. So I don't know if you're concerned, I am too, but at least the velocity is stable and at least his last start, he was missing bats. Like those are two things that I still like to look for to kind of avoid a collapse. But
I will agree. The velocity does make me feel a little better. That does make me feel better. It's just not the dominant feel that he once was. Mm-hmm. You mentioned Kyle Wright earlier. He definitely got a monitor going forward because that is quite a precipitous drop off from April to May. But I want to mention Josiah Gray. This is a guy that 21.2 K to walk in April, 8.1 in May. We know he's got some electric stuff, young pitcher. We knew even last year walks and home runs were an issue. Well, in May, walks and home runs have become an issue again. And that has been his bugaboo. April, he avoided the long ball, and that saved his butt. But we're back to problems with Josiah Gray. So which one is it? It would be April or is it May?
I'm leaning more May. The control's not there. He's given up. And he's one of the guys, too, I think, with like the offense is coming back. And offense came back in May. And Josiah Gray is a big fly ball guy, 45% fly ball rate in April, 54% fly ball rate in May. Like he gives up a lot of fly balls, and he is one of those guys who will benefit more than the average pitcher from a depressed offensive environment. And that seems to be waning and probably will continue to wane through the summer. So a major drop in skills, major drop in strikeouts, velocity looks good, but walks and fly balls, like you said, that's a horrific combo on a team where he's not going to get much run support with Washington. So I'm very concerned about Josiah Gray right now.
Yeah, he's a tough one to hold on to here pretty soon. It's got to be a matchup thing with him because he'll have those starts where he looks phenomenal, but there's gonna be a lot of questionable outings out there for sure.
Yeah.
Paul Blackburn, another guy that people loved. They picked him up. They were rolling with him in April. Things were good. And to be honest with you, before his last start, where he gave it 4 runs to Houston, overall it has not been that bad. He had one start where he gave it 5 walks. Otherwise, it hasn't been too bad. He went from a 21.9% K to walk in April, 9.3% in May. It could be a one-start outlier that made the huge gap. So this is why kind of looking at these stats, like you mentioned, it might not be as bad as it looks type thing. I think Blackburn still has a lot of legs behind him.
I do. And I agree. Like, and the park is great. Not going to get much run support, that sort of thing. But I mean, everyone knows Paul Blackburn's not going to keep a 2.15 ERA. Like we've moved past that stage of analyzing baseball. But I think he can absolutely hold like a mid to high threes the rest of the season, which again, like has value in deeper leagues just because of the control and the ground ball. So we were just, this is the anti Josiah Gray who walks people and gives up fly balls. Blackburn does the exact opposite. He doesn't walk anybody. He keeps it on the ground. Like even though the dominance, the strikeouts aren't really there and the swing strike rate tanked in May, like he'll be serviceable. He'll be fine. No one's expecting him to be 2.15 ERA, but I'm not expecting him to blow up either. I think, like I said, rest of season, mid-high threes ERA, probably not a lot of wins. you mentioned the Houston star, like Houston, that's a tough lineup, but I think Blackburn, I kept rolling with him in this week's two-step, even though it's Houston. I forget who he gets on the back end of it, but it I think was even worse than Houston. So I kept rolling with him in town anyway. So he'll be fine. The combination of grounders and not giving up the free pass is going to work for him. But don't expect that 2.15 ERA. You don't need me to tell you that.
Well, Merrill Kelly. It was fun while it lasted. It was fun. 16.7% K to walk in April, 7% in May. And it's funny, though, when you look at it, he's going about five innings, 3 runs or less in most starts. Blow up against the Dodgers, that'll happen. But the strikeouts aren't there. It's just it's a guy that's going to give you 5 to 6 innings of 3 runs or less and limit your strikeout upside. That's Merrill Kelly with potential blowups. Is that something that interests you, Ryan?
No, potential blowups do not interest me. Blowups are like the worst thing that can possibly happen. And like, that's my nightmare as a fan, as in this hobby, is pulling out your phone and seeing 6 earned, 7 earned, whatever, and 2 innings and a very high number on your ERA. It's funny, like with Kelly, though, I have not seen him very often. The one start that I did watch kind of all the way through was his best start of the year. He almost had a complete game against Colorado. 8 Ks, 2 walks, but that was actually May 6th. So his May numbers actually include that outing. Just got torched by LA, gave up 8 earned runs in 2 innings. And so that's the blow up that we're talking about. So Merrill Kelly, at the end of the day, has not been serviceable in previous years, really had that 2.59 ERA in 2020. But we saw the real Merrill Kelly last season. I don't think what we're seeing in 2021 is that much different. So I would not be surprised if his ERA shoots north of 4 here pretty soon. And like you said, kind of a matchups play at best. And you're pretty much playing with fire if you've got him in there.
Reed Detmers threw a no-hitter this year. Reed Detmers can't strike guys out. 15.5% K to walk in April, 5.7 in May, and that includes a 9-inning no-hitter where he struck out two batters. He's given up 4 home runs in his 2 starts since the no-hitter, walked 3 in those starts. That no-hitter was cool and all, Ryan, but I think we're not going to see something like that again from him.
Yeah, and I didn't want to be that guy, like when you saw the no-hitter. Like, no-hitters are cool. Like, we celebrate that stuff. Like, it's a great moment for Detmers. It's a great moment for the Angels. But, like, that was one of the worst no-hitters that you'll watch. I mean, 2 strikeouts, like, that's just, yeah. And like you said, that's actually part of his May. The no-hitter was on May 10th. So, like, this downfall actually includes that no-hitter. And you look at Detmers, that 5.7% K minus walk, like that is totally unrosable. If you're holding on to Reed Detmers because he threw a no hitter, that's not doing it right. You got to move on from him. There is some prospect pedigree. He's only 22. I'm not saying like he's toast or anything, but I think in redraft leagues, like, he's just very hard to roster just because you're not getting the whiffs, so you're not getting the strikeouts, and you're just leaving it up to contact right now. And the Angels are kind of in free fall right now too, so the team context is not as good as it once was in April as well.
Eric Lauer, 31.5% K to walk in April, 14.9 in May. The big thing in May is he's walking guys. He's got it says 10 walks in his 5 May starts compared to 5 in his 4 April starts. And the strikeouts have been down a bit as well, not helping him. He's still been good. That's the thing that's confusing. Like, he's still been effective, giving you good quality starts, but the walks are up and the strikeouts are down. Is there anything to be concerned about here, Ryan?
A little bit. Like, I don't know. We thought Eric Lauer was like the breakout guy, the next like Burns or Woodruff on that staff, just because they're in the same rotation. And he's not the guy we saw. I think a lot we saw in April. I think a lot of this is just him going from just an absolute heater in April, who, you know, that is just so hard to repeat. I mean, what was the strikeout minus walk in April? 31.5%. Like, no one holds that for very long. So to go down from that to something more league average is fine. One thing I look at with walks that you mentioned, Bubba, the rise in walks in May is at HQ, we look at ball percentage and also first pitch strike rate, and those were fine. So I think, and actually his first pitch strike rate was much improved in May. So I'm not too worried about the lack of control. I just don't think the obscene strikeout rate is going to be what it was. I mean, 37% K rate in April. I think we're settling more kind of mid-20s. The rest of the season, it was 24% in May. So I think Eric Lauer is an above average pitcher. I don't think we're getting the ace that we thought we might have, like a breakout in progress in April.
A couple more here. Joe Ryan. Everybody loved Joe Ryan in draft season. 22.9% K to walk in April. 10% in May. 10% in May. That's because the walks were up. Pretty simple here. And mainly one start. He gave up five walks on May 10th versus the Astros. There's an Astros theme here, folks. So five walks in that outing. Otherwise, he's been pretty much a similar pitcher most of the season. So I guess I'm not super concerned, but you might have some of those encounters with him.
You bring up a great point too, like I was talking about context earlier and like schedule and that sort of thing. But with looking at 1 month samples, like one bad outing can absolutely throw this whole thing off. So yeah, like Joe Ryan, look at the game log, his walks by game is he walked four in his first start, but then 0-1-1-1-5-0-2. So you're at the point where even if for the entire season where like one bad day where you just don't have it is going to affect your numbers over a month or even what we've seen so far. So yeah, not really too concerned since it was all in one outing that he gave it up. Don't have Joe Ryan anywhere. So we'll see, and currently on the COVID list, but I don't think that'll be too long, but yeah, 2.28 ERA on the season, 4.33 xERA. That's one at HQ. He's been pretty lucky with the home run ball, 5% homer to fly ball rate, 54% fly ball rate. That's not a good mix when you're giving that many fly balls and they're not landing in the seats. It's great for your BABIP. It's great for your WHIP and your ERA when it's working. But once summer comes up and the offense is coming back, that's going to really hurt Joe Ryan, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. Nestor Cortez dropped from 32.1 to 19.4. Kevin Gausman, 32.6 to 22.1. Still good K to walks. Just massive drop-offs from some elite numbers. Any concern with either of those two guys that everyone's pitching every time out right now?
Not really. And Cortez shoved on Thursday against the Angels. Yep. So I don't know. I am definitely FOMOing Nestor Cortez. I did not pick him up or draft him anywhere. And teams that are ahead of me in the standings have. But looks great. Not worried about the lower one.
It's nice having some nasty Nestor, I'll be honest. It's pretty nice. All right. If people want to see more of this, Ryan tweeted out to the Bloom boards. And so it's easy to find there on Ryan at RyanBHQ on Twitter. We hit about 60% of them at least. So, and we'll hit up some listener questions now that'll cover some more of them. So let's have some fun here, Ryan. We'll start with our good buddy, Richard Sands. He said, someone dropped Jose Barrios in a 16-team 5x5 redraft home league. Is he worth a waiver claim or should he wait for Jesus Sanchez the next day? He's dropping Darren Ruff. So would you add Jose Barrios or Jesus Sanchez?
Which is dropping Darren Ruff, which is probably advised. I drop Ruff. I would drop Ruff. I mean, you know, one's a pitcher, one's a hitter, so the easy cop out is like, oh, it depends on your team. But if Ruff is your drop and like a 16 teamer, yeah, like Jose Barrios, you want to pick up. I'd probably go Sanchez, just in a vacuum, over Barrios, just because he is kind of on a heater, hitting for power, playing every day in Miami. And we talked about all the injuries that they had earlier in the show. Barrios, I've got him in TGFBI and held him in my starting him for way too long. I think last week was the first time I benched him. It's going to take a little while for me to even think about cutting him in TGFBI again, a 15 teamer. So just because the track record has been so good, like he could just be off and have a bad stretch right now. I mean, it's ugly. The skills are ugly. The skills are just as bad as the surface stats, but I'm giving him quite a long leash. I'm at least holding another month and let's see what goes on, but he is not in my, GFBI lineup anymore. I'm just kind of stashing him.
Yeah, in my 12-team formats, he's been on my bench for a while, and I've been really close to dropping him there.
That's
really
close, and a 12, that's tough.
It's getting real close. Real close. Yeah. It's a tough one because, like you said, the pedigree's there. You're waiting for him to turn the corner, but the underlying stats do not look great at all. Edward J. Gillis asks, "Hi, gentlemen. What is up with Trevor Rogers, as he is killing me in a couple high-stakes events, double starts next week and the first at home against Washington. Should he play or sit him?" Trevor Rogers was 6.6% K-to-walk in April, 15% in May, and Mr. Bloomfield wrote an article on Trevor Rogers a week or two ago at Baseball HQ. So the floor is yours. What's going on with Trevor Rogers?
I mean, for Rogers, it all centers around that changeup, man. The changeup was the key to his breakout in 2021. I think like a 20% swinging strike with a great ground ball rate on it. Like that was, it was one of the better changeups in baseball. And he has completely lost command of the changeup. It's not getting whiffs. He's not locating it consistently, which is what I found in the article. And so once you lose command of that changeup, not only does it, you know, leaving a changeup up is probably one of the worst pitches in baseball, along with like a splitter, leaving that in the zone. And that's what he's been doing. But that also affects your fastball. If you're spitting on that changeup, you can kind of sit fastball and bombs away. So I'm really worried about Trevor Rogers. Like, yeah, he did get a little bit better in May, and actually had three straight starts in May with double digit whiffs, which is nice. So I still think there's something there. The velocity's fine. I don't think it's an injury. I think it's just lost feel for the changeup, tipping pitches, something like that. Either way, I'm holding in 15s, definitely, probably holding in 12s. Just because I really like Trevor Rogers heading into the season, it looks like I'm going to take a pretty big L. But yeah, that's the deal with him. It all goes back to the changeup. Let's see how often he uses it in his next few starts and see how effective it is. It's kind of funny. Like in my main event, I had the option. I actually put this out on Twitter. Was like, Trevor Rogers was pitching at Coors this week, and so he was an option for my last pitcher spot. The other option was Chad Kuhl at Coors against Atlanta, which is pretty brutal too. The third option was Andrew Kittredge, who's basically just a zero. Like, he's on the IL, but yeah, might come back Friday and maybe get a save. So is basically taking a zero better than Trevor Rogers or Chad Kuhl. I went with Kittredge, and I'm feeling pretty good about it so far. So as yeah, bad as that sounds, because so Rogers got rocked, but we'll see how it turns out. But yeah, worried, but holding. It's kind of interesting. I mean, who would you take? But we just talked about Berríos, and I kind of had the same conclusion, like holding, but benching. Who would you take rest of the season, Berríos or Rogers?
Oh, man, that's really difficult. I think I go Rogers based on team and division, and the fact he's getting whiffs. Berríos isn't even doing that. So, like, there's some optimism in potential strikeouts with Rogers someday, where Berríos just doesn't have anything right now. So that's tricky.
I want to see. So, Tal Edward did ask. Go ahead. I was just going to say,
Edwards did. Are you going to bring up the mock draft?
Yeah, I was going to pull that up. They did so NFBC didn't do, typically NFBC does Memorial Day drafts where you draft around last weekend. They didn't do it this year, but Edwards did a mock. And Trevor Rogers went, I think it was 12-team mock. Trevor Rogers went in the 19th round. Mr. Berríos went in the 11th. So, wow, that's a pretty big split.
Yeah, pretty big I'd say split. So. Wow.
Just one that's draft. But
much yeah, higher than I expected.
Yeah.
But Edward did ask, so Rogers has versus Washington and at Houston next week, two-step. Would you start him? God.
So I'm going to have to make this decision on Monday, so I might as well have to do it live on the pod.
I'd say yes.
I'm going to do it. Yeah,
I'd say yes.
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I would do it. The Washington start is pretty great. Houston's been pretty good, but I'd roll with it. If you know, you're holding him for a reason. If you have those two start weeks with one that's a decent matchup, yeah, I don't feel great about it though.
Yeah. It's tough, but that's the 15 team life. David R asks at Avs for Life. Awesome piece of info talking about the Bloom board. What's up with Carlos Carrasco? He walked five guys his last game. Do you trust him next week versus San Diego and at Atlanta? Carlos has been pretty good.
Yeah. Carlos Carrasco has been actually fantastic. He has a 3.63
yes.
ERA and gave up 8 earned runs in one start. So, despite that blow up, has been really good. But I'm not worried about this last out. Actually, his last out is actually a really cool story. I don't know if you saw this, but the first time that his dad had ever seen him pitch in the majors. And I don't know. I mean, I wonder, I mean, obviously Carrasco knows that, like, what was he going through? What was he thinking about in that start? Must've been a really cool feeling for him. Probably really amped up to, you know, pitch well, impress his dad, all that sort of thing. And had 5 walks. I mean, that's all pure speculation, but I'm not worried at all about Carlos Carrasco. He's been fantastic. And one of the best stories in baseball. I really hope it keeps going and he can avoid the injury bug like the rest of the Mets rotation has not been able to do.
100% agree with you. You're starting them for sure. Ben Tidd asks, would you guys hold on to Keller as a streamer and a 15 teamer? I'm assuming he's talking about Brad Keller based on the Bloom board. Would you keep him as a streamer? For me, if he's a streamer, he's not always on your roster is the way I see it.
Yeah, that's kind of what I see too is, yeah, if he's a streamer, you're only doing matchups. I mean, this is a guy, Brad Keller had a 2.19 ERA in April. May it all fell apart. And the strikeout minus walk rate was 3.7. Like, you can't have that on your team. So no, I would say even in like a 15 teamer, I don't feel good at all about starting Brad Keller or Mitch Keller for that.
For that matter, exactly. Brandon W. asks, what happened to Rodon? Velocity holding steady, but he flipped from dominant to pretty bad overnight. We hit on that pretty good earlier, Brandon, so I think you got it covered there. Sons of Chandler asks, Charlie and Trevor, buy low status. Trevor, I think, yes, we agreed upon, but what about Charlie?
Sons of Chandler. Every time, I think it's like Ron Chandler. I don't know who this guy is, but it's...
He's got a picture of Ron Chandler, so it's pretty good.
This thing's a picture of Ron. So I'm like, whoa, is he responding to me? Charlie Morton, I'm less, I don't know. I think they're both in the same boat. Hold if you can. I've got them both on my mixed labor team, and I'm not really even thinking about cutting either one. That's a 15 teamer. So depending on matchups is the one that I'm going to start that week. But not looking at cutting either one right now. I think you've got to hold and just kind of hope that this is a rough patch of the season and 4 months to go. These guys have been great before and just ride it out. It's a long season.
No doubt about it. And then the last question we have, it was about Luis Garcia for Washington, which we hit on earlier. So we got you covered there as well. But Mr. Bloomfield, that'll wrap us up. Any final thoughts for the listeners as we looked at Cade Walk? We're about 2 months into the season now, a third of the season in the books. It's getting interesting out there, my friend.
It is. It's tough to make that transition from, oh, it's early, don't worry about it. Like, this is the time of year where you start to get skittish a little bit. And just from judging from some of the questions, like, we're getting skittish over Trevor Rogers and Charlie Morton. It's we're that far into the season now where, like, the damage has been done. The matter is, are we going to see that turnaround? So still ride it out. Keep going. It's easy to, you know, it's summertime, school's out. It's easy to, you know, maybe your teams are down in 10th or 8th or whatever place. It's easy to ease up a bit, but keep going. This is the time where you can actually still really make gains. I saw Justin Mason in his main event had a great day. I think like 2 or 3 days ago and gained 10 points in a day. That stuff still happens even at this juncture. So keep at it, avoid those blowups, and let's go Trevor Rogers, man.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, looking at the standings, a lot of tightness in the categories, just overall standings still. So a lot of movement can be taking place, especially with hitting all of a sudden showing up, which means pitching is not. So things are going to start flipping pretty quickly if you have certain days, which make things a lot of fun. So don't give up yet. Work the waiver wire. Look at matchups like we talk about. That's the big, big thing to do. Like, it sounds boring, but like we were both on a bunch of Cubs. We're not the only ones, but the Cubs had 9 games, but there's 3 teams with 8 games this last week. Like, there's lots of ways to attack categories. So don't throw in the towel yet. And don't forget John Birdie, folks. John Birdie, if you need steals. But that'll do it for us there. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. I'm on Twitter at BDendrick. And this was Bubba in the Bloom, episode 9. Catch you guys next week.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.